Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, well, is this weekly or is this, well, we're bi-weekly right now, I think. I don't think I did a show last week, but I'm pretty sure I did one the week before. So I can say bi-weekly. There was times this summer where it wasn't even that. But thank you for joining us in our bi-weekly, vigorous, relentless, and many times ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the exceptionally well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. And as always, it's my pleasure to speak to the most informed gun owners in the state of Wisconsin or anywhere else that might be listening. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be a part of the show with your comments, criticism, participation. A couple different ways you can interact if you're listening live is 563-999-3787. Again, 563-999-3787. We'll get you through the Well-Armed Studio. You can also interact on the messaging, the chat that the Blog Talk Radio offers. And then lastly, you have the option to, I'll keep one eye on the Well-Armed Radio page on MeWe. I'll keep an eye on it there. And, you know, I wonder if... There's got to be, I'm sure you can do it for an organization, for an entity, not just a person. That Truth Social, I should probably start a Well-Armed Radio page for Truth Social. I've got my own page, and I think, Wisconsin Carry has a page. I've got my own page. And then, so if you are on Truth Social, definitely hit me up there. What's my, let me see here, what's my handle on Truth Social? I'm just at Nick Clark, at N-I-K-C-L-A-R-K. And then Wisconsin Carry is, of course, at Wisconsin Carry. And then, like I said, I think I might even put start a show page for Well Armed Radio on Truth. As you know, my deal with Truth, I like Truth better than Twitter. I think it's a good replacement for Twitter because it mirrors what Twitter does. What I don't like is I think that social media needed a competitor to Facebook, not a competitor to, well, perhaps it needs a competitor to Twitter as well. But I think the real gold wasn't in a competitor to Twitter. I think Twitter is a place where really people who are already famous can get their message out directly to a whole bunch of people who want to follow people who are already famous. Facebook is the place where baby boomers, Gen Xers, perhaps older millennials, that's where they go to get their social media and then in turn their interaction. And I think Facebook is a far better platform to network and socialize on behalf of, well, any whatever you want to, but in the case of us, it would be freedom and conservative causes, conservative initiatives. But because like Twitter, I mean, like example, like my mom. My mom's on Facebook. I'm banned from Facebook for life, of course. Hey, got some people in the chat here. Got my brother-in-law, Mike, and then Eben. Great to have you in, both you guys. Eben, good to see you. Good to hear from you. I hope you're doing well. And so, yeah, Facebook, I think, would be is the place where more, if you want to reach a wider swath of people. Twitter's where, yeah, if you want to reach the media types, if you want a place where famous people can interact with other famous people, or where people who want to follow famous people can follow them, that's what Twitter is, and in turn, that's what True Social is. But like my mom, again, baby boomers, Gen Xers, maybe older millennials, they like Facebook. That's where you connect with your old classmates, with your coworkers, with high school these are classmates too, but your high school classmates, your college classmates, people from other jobs that you worked. Facebook is where the older generations, and I say older, I mean Gen X, baby boomer, and maybe older millennials, where they spend all the time. I think whatever the new generations are called, the Gen Zs or whatever, they're they're like the Instagram and the TikTok, and that's where they want to go. Facebook usership among the younger generations, the college, high school age generations, is way, way down. In fact, almost non-existent. But so, yeah, I think if example Trump really wanted to be, so that was how Facebook was so successful, is that you've got people who are politically engaged, example me, example you guys probably, and then you've got maybe people that you were friends again, example my mom. My mom was on Facebook. She's somewhat politically aware, but certainly not politically active. I mean, she's, maybe a marginally news consumer, just network news. I mean, not a political junkie, not a policy, someone who pays close attention to things, pays attention, but not close attention. And so then that was the great thing about Facebook, is the people who were really politically engaged and really informed on the topics and on what's going on and beyond the mainstream media bias, they would post stuff, and then that would immediately get shown to your friends who weren't so, policy wonk. That's a good, Eben throws that term out. That's a good, I like that, term that we've heard used before. So that's the thing about Facebook that Twitter and Truth Social being a clone of Twitter. Again, compared to Twitter, I like Truth better. But I think the real gold was in replicating Facebook, and Truth Social is nowhere close to that, but nowhere close to the functionality nor the privacy settings and the networking ability and all that other stuff. So just it's a bit of a shame. I'm kind of curious how Truth Social is going. I mean, everybody had high hopes for it, and we thought it was going to be the true challenge to Facebook. Some of us hoped. And it's definitely not. I don't know if they ever have thoughts to make it go that direction or not. And I think I've talked about this in the show before. I think they missed their mark. I think Truth missed its mark and missed its opportunity to really grab, because after that initial interest, you've got to capture that. You've got to take advantage of that. And so now if Truth was to evolve into a more Facebook-like platform, they've got to then fight the battle of people who thought that Truth was just a clone of Twitter. So anyway, that said, I maybe should start Well-Armed Radio Truth Social page and get to grow the show a little bit more there. It's just my listenership is down since my Facebook for getting banned from Fascist Book, where I forgot if there was 2,500 or so people that followed the Wisconsin Carry page there, and used to get a good number of them clicking into shows. But so anyway, don't think I gave this yet, but we'll start the show with the usual warning. That's no sacred cows here. And so I got some listener email from my friend and a friend of the show and a friend of Wisconsin Carry, Tom in Madison, and I don't know if he's still in Madison, but I think still Dane County area. But anyway, Tom. And so he posed a couple of questions to me, and I thought, well, what better way to address those than to do it on the show? And so he asked me two questions. He said he hadn't heard me talk about bourbon much lately. So I'm happy to do that. We'll talk about bourbon. And then he also asked me a question about polling places and polling places being posted and things like that. And that's a good topic because in less than a month, we've got the midterm elections coming up, which hopefully we get some more fair, free elections than we had in 2020. Because I 100% believe if the midterms are fair and free, we're going to see a massive red wave. And I'm hoping for more than just a red wave. I'm hoping for a red wave of Republicans willing to do right by the country, not just be in power. Because for too long, Republicans are just willing, they're just happy to be in power. Yeah, Tea Party reminds me of Tea Party. There's Tea Party swept a bunch of Republicans into office, and then what they do with it, they just started to enjoy being in power and trying to get reelected and think about getting reelected instead of doing what was good for people. And I think as Ron DeSantis has proven down in Florida, if you do what's good for people, you're going to grow in popularity. Don't do what's good for the media. Don't try to please the media. Don't try to get elected and then become the Republican. Look, if you have, and I think a lot of Republicans have this deep-seated burning desire to be like popular and in the in crowd, like Democrats are, like Democrat. You know, they say politics is Hollywood for ugly people. And I think that also politics is okay. Politics is power for not wealthy people. You know, you start a company, you do well in business, you get a lot of money. With that money, you can do a lot of things. I mean, you can, from starting organizations to funding things to, I mean, you can do a lot of things when you're well funded. But for people, I see this all the time. I see people that you know, don't have a business, don't have a real career that they're crushing and doing really well. But they start getting involved in political campaigns and because you can, if you want to be a sycophant, a suck up, you can glom onto some political campaigns, and then you'll always be a hanger on, but you'll be close to those in power if you can get on a winning political campaign. And then at that point, once you're a loyalist to a political campaign, someone that gets elected, then you will have eventually some kind of positions provided to you. And that's how it works in political campaigns. But anyway, I see a lot of people that get into politics and then like just being popular, have that deep-seated desire. So even Republicans, they have that deep-seated desire to just be a political celebrity, I'll call it, to have power because of the political, have fame because of your political involvement. You know, you're not, you can't dunk a basketball, you can't throw two touchdown passes in a game, you can't, you're not in movies on TV, but, you know, if you get involved in politics, you'll find some notoriety. You can find some notoriety there. And I really do think that there's a lot of Republicans that have that deep-seated desire to be like part of the in crowd. In fact, I'll even say it. I think that in some respects, Dan O'Donnell strikes me as that. He's just some of the angles that he takes on his show on WISN. And I like Dan. And I love 80% of what he does. But sometimes I just, especially like he doesn't strike me. And maybe it's just the angles that he chooses to take on the show. It seems like sometimes he's got a little bit of an anti-Trump less than enthusiastic Trump. And I think that people should be, if you're really about policy and results, you should be such a huge Trump fan. Because with the exception of the Second Amendment, ironically, Trump, I think, was one of the greatest presidents ever. And for policy and again, the Second Amendment being kind of the exception to that, which is unfortunate, but then I still kind of just hear, and others on WISN too, they equivocate, on Donald Trump, and they still want to go back to the old Republican Party of just, go along to get along Republicans. And it's almost like these people that run in the media circles, because they want to be in the in crowd and they're, but as a conservative, you're never going to be part of the celebrity crowd. Even if you get notoriety, you're going to be like okay, Rush Limbaugh. He was larger than life. He was the biggest media figure in the country, but he didn't get the, if there was a liberal who had the reach of a show like Rush Limbaugh did and the wealth of Rush Limbaugh, they would have been a mega celeb. But because Rush Limbaugh was a conservative, forget the fact that he was insanely rich because of his success with the show. Forget the fact that he was insanely popular, the most listened to person in the country. Forget all that. He just, because he was a conservative, he wasn't part of the in crowd. He wasn't, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure he got invited to big events and things like that. But even when he got invited to he would Russell and I would talk about this. Even when he got invited to the media correspondence dinner or the broadcast, just various trade entities for his success in radio, he still was just treated like a second-class celebrity, because that's how conservatives are treated. Conservatives are treated like second-class celebrities. You're never part of the in crowd. And I think that some people like Dan O'Donnell, I think his show has been real popular, but I just get the feeling that he still has that deep desire to want to be part of the true media in crowd and the true media celebrity in crowd, which you won't because you're a conservative. But that's why I sense, it's just my hunch, that's why I sense that people like Donald Trump are uncomfortable for the Dan O'Donnells of the world, because expressing too much support for Trump or not having a bit of a asterisk next to your support for Trump, like, oh yeah, I support Trump, but all the mean tweets, which again, I contend that the stuff Trump tweets is not mean compared to what Democrats tweet. And so this notion that, you know, Trump was a mean tweeter, ask him. Ask anybody that says, oh, yeah, Trump, when he's, you know, he's mean tweets, he says mean things. Ask him. Name a mean thing he said. Name something controversial he said. And what they usually, if it's not the Billy Bush comment from the bus, you know, grab him by the you-know-what, people couldn't name anything mean that Trump said. And if they did, they probably just heard the news media say, oh, yeah, Trump said mean and Trump this and Trump that. Anyway. So now I'm losing track. How did I get down this whole political? I started talking about people going into politics, Republicans going, the red wave. So yeah, so I think free and fair elections, we will have a red wave in November. And hopefully if that red wave does happen, that it'll be truly Republicans who recognize that freedom is in peril, and it's not just, hey, now we're elected and let's, great, now we're the ones in power. It really needs to be, we need change. We need election reform in Wisconsin to make sure cheating can't happen anymore. We need so many things. We need border security. We need economic common sense. Just a number of things that we need to save the Republic. And if we do that, you know, it's reason to be optimistic and hopefully a red wave, because just a red wave because your team wins. So this isn't football. You know, many people feel great. Hey, oh, Republicans won. Great. You know, things will be all right. No, it's more than that. We need Republicans who are willing to do something and change the trajectory of this country, or they won't be in power for long. And the Democrats will figure their crap out and get some of the radical talking points. They'll never get the radical out of their blood, but they'll get the radical talking points off of the front and center. And if we just get go along to get along Republicans who don't really make a difference, Democrats are going to be back in power very soon. So anyway, so we'll talk about polling places today. That was another question that Tom had posed to me, or comment about, I think some of his polling places are posted. And so to start with, had a nice weekend. The first weekend, we didn't take the yacht out. It was weather was just kind of iffy. So we took up, I think I might have told you guys, I purchased this inflatable truck topper. I've been looking for something. We were looking at travel trailers. We were looking at, because after the yacht goes away for the year, we've already hiked all the places around southeastern Wisconsin and up to from essentially, you know, Two Rivers to Janesville. We've hit the whole, if there's a trail or a, and again, not all of them. I've still actually got a number of other lists, but we've hit the Ice Age Trail from Janesville to Two Rivers. We've hit all of the main, like in the southern Kettle Moraine, they call it the Moraine Ridge Trail. In the northern Kettle, they call it the Bridle Path. It's the snowmobile bridle path. It's the horse and snowmobile trails up there. So we've hit all the horse and snowmobile trails also down in the southern Kettle, all the horse and snowmobile trails in the northern Kettle, in addition to the Ice Age Trail. So we're just, you know, looking for, and then we've a good number of the DNR wildlife areas, which you really can't hit till after the first of the year, till after hunting season closes, because otherwise all the DNR wildlife areas, they've got hunters and they're not going to be too pleased with just a dude and his fiance out there with a German Shepherd walking around just for a hiking, for hike purposes. But anyway, so we're looking to extend our reach for our weekend adventures. And again, summer between mosquitoes and ticks and hot weather and sweat and all that stuff. We don't hike during the summer. We're on the, and the fact that we have a yacht, we're on the yacht, which we had fun with this summer. We made it over to Michigan. Probably talked about that in the show, made it over to Michigan once and, down to Racine, up to Port Washington. So we had some good fun with it. Otherwise, we stayed out local for a lot of the weekends. But that goes away, then it's hiking season. So I started looking at maybe travel trailers to give us a little more weekend reach for a number of reasons. One, I want something that I want to can use in the winter. So you need a good travel trailer, well-insulated. I don't want to have to winterize it after every trip, which means that I really want to be able to keep it in my garage, trying to find any way I need to modify my garage in order to get a trailer, the trailer that I want to fit. So just a whole bunch of things. So it was kind of like, so then I'm like, how much would we use? I just, you know, tossing all those things around. And then I saw this inflatable truck topper. It's called a Flated, F-L-A-T-E-D. So if you go, their website is GetFlated, G-E-T-F-L-A-T-E-D, GetFlated.com. So I bought this inflatable truck topper. It's kind of like the same material that like an inflatable boat or a stand-up paddleboard would be made out of, but you inflate it to about, I don't know, 9 PSI. And then you got a little truck topper and it's roomy inside. It's so we took that this weekend. I bought that a couple months ago. Finally had the first chance to use it this weekend. Put it on Thursday. And then Friday we headed up to Bighorn State Park up in central Wisconsin. Central. The Cedar area, Castle Rock, like that'd be considered central Wisconsin. So headed up there, stayed one night at Bighorn State Park. My first time camping since I think junior high. And so we just bought a real nice sleeping pad. I kind of had the back of the truck nice and outfitted. We had a heater in there. We had, I bought this Blue Eddy power station that could literally can run like a microwave, an air conditioner. It's a lithium battery power station that after you charge it up, it'll run. So we could have microwave and charge phones and anything you wanted to do with it, we could do. I think mostly we used it for running the microwave for cooking food. We were only up there for about a day, one night, and went up there Friday afternoon. So super cool, worked out well. It was down to 26 outside where we were camping, but it stayed about 46. If we weren't running the heater, it was about 46 inside the trailer. Bought some really nice sleeping bags, really, you know, low temperature sleeping bags. So it was about 46 inside the back of the truck with the flated top on. And then it was down to 26 outside. And if we ran the heater, because when we were awake and we had downloaded some Netflix, watching Jeffrey Dahmer series, we had it up to, 75 degrees in the back of the truck with the little tiny propane heater going. And then, but once we went to bed, no need to run the heat. We're in these really comfortable sleeping bags and we were very warm and slept fine and comfy and warm, except for when I had to get up and get out of the truck to go to the bathroom and freeze the stones off. But so yeah, we did that. Pete Well Rock is a place. So I haven't been up to the Nisida area for, except passing by on the interstate since I was in probably early junior high, maybe sixth grade, maybe it was even like elementary school, but probably I'd say maybe sixth grade, maybe seventh grade tops. My great grandparents used to live up there, before they passed. And, so I was looking forward to going up there. I take it back. I have been to Castle Rock Lake a couple times, but that's on the, accessing from the eastern side of the lake, which is close to where my parents go for their religious retreat camp meeting. But being over in Nisida, again, I hadn't been there since my great grandparents lived there. And so there's a place called Pete and Well Rock, also called Pete and Well Bluff, and they used to take us hiking there. And I loved it. And it's not a big area. You could probably circumnavigate the thing in about 45 minutes, but there's a lot of, it's this big rock outcropping, I guess, sandstone cliffs. And so there's a lot of, actual kind of climbing, rope, technical, harness rope, type climbers that go up there, and scale the various cliffs and areas. There's got to be, half a dozen different spots, maybe more, where people, different routes where people like real climbers. And then you've got people like me who just hike and like scramble. Scrambling is where you don't have any gear. You're just kind of picking your way over boulders and stuff like that. And that's what we, hang on, I need a sip of water here. And so when we were younger, I used to I had to run up and down that hill. My parents, my dad, my stepmom would, be slowly making their way up, and we would just literally run from the bottom, run up the hill, come back down, meet my parents again. Oh, you guys got to see it up here. Run back up, run all the way around the thing. It was super fun. But I'd never been up to the top of it. I never quote summited, Pete and Well Rock or Pete and Well Bluff. So I've looked at this for years, wanted to get back up there for, safe to say decades. I hadn't thought about it a lot when I was in my 20s and 30s. But now, as we've been hiking with the dog, and I was like, I really wanted to get back up to Pete and Well Bluff and see it as an adult. So we get up there. That was kind of our goal with going here. Bighorn State Park is very close by. So that was the point of going there, staying there overnight, and then going to Pete and Well Bluff. So got there Saturday, hiked up and hiked around. But I couldn't find how to get to the top. I could see where the guys were climbing to get to the various peaks, climbing with ropes and gear. But I scrambled up to this one point where then it was still probably 20, 30 feet below the top. So you can't really, you weren't above the treetops. So you really didn't get like the full view, the 360 panorama. So, me and then Kim and the dog, they couldn't make it up to some of the spots where I had scrambled to. Kim probably could have, but the dog couldn't. So she kind of stayed, 30, 40 feet lower as I scrambled up some of these more vertical sections. And, but I still never found out how. I've been seeing YouTube videos where people were shooting YouTube videos from the top, like the top of Pete Well Bluff, where they can look all the way around, you're above the treetops. You can look all the way east, south, north, west, and see for just miles and miles and miles and miles. And that was my goal. I wanted to, get up to the top of the ridge of Pete and Well Bluff, and never did it. Never found the way to get up there. There was, just because we had the dog, there was some sections where, dogs aren't, and part of Pete and Well Bluff is very steep drop-offs down to one side. So if you were to lose your footing, you're sliding down a ways, probably not deadly, but you're going to be banged up. And same thing with the dog. There was all these, the pine trees were all losing their needles, and there was just pine needles like everywhere. And those pine needles, like they were like an inch deep in some spots where they kind of collect. And so there were spots where it was slick. I mean, there's rocks underneath it, and then you got these pine needles on top, and you're slipping and sliding. So for that reason, some of the places we were trying to go, I was like, the dog probably can't make it through here. We were worried about the dog slipping and ending up careening down. And see, that's the thing. As a person, you know, you slip and it's like, okay, you kind of lay on your back and kind of spread your arms and legs and just let yourself slide to a stop. Well, if the dog slips and he's falling, you know, dogs, they're going to be thrashing about and trying. It's not like they're just going to take a nice little slide down till they can come to a stop. They're going to be, they lose their footing and start to slide. They're going to freak out and start trying to flip themselves vertical and stand up when they, instead of just letting themselves slide to a stop and then assess. Anyway, so there was just places we couldn't take the dog. So I never found how to scramble up to the summit. It was kind of bummed, but we had fun. I mean, it was a good time, but now I definitely have to go back. I have to go back for two reasons. One, because I've never, I haven't been able to find my way to the summit of Pete Well Rock by scrambling. And I know it's possible because I see these, I've read online, I've seen YouTube videos of guys, they don't show the way up there, but they show them up there. And there's like, I see dudes up there that just, they're in a polo shirt and shorts and tennis shoes. They didn't have any climbing gear. There was probably a 10, 12 year old kid that was up there. So, I mean, it can't be that hard to get up there. I've read online where there's a guy who said, yeah, this old retiree it was pretty easy to get to the top. So if you know how to get up there. But there's no marked trails and no marked. It's all just a natural area. So the reason I brought this up in the show is if anybody's listening from central Wisconsin and you're really familiar, I think I've kind of figured it out. I watched the YouTube videos that people have posted. And if you go to YouTube and Google Pete and Well Bluff, you'll see them. There's one that's about a 60-second video and it's super cool. I mean, if you've never seen this rock formation, that's, I would check it out. Go to Google and type in, go to YouTube, type in Pete and Well Bluff, or you can go to Google and type in Pete and Well Bluff, Pete and Well Rock. We always call it Pete and Well Rock. I think if you Google, and Pete and Well is P-E-T-E-N-W-E-L-L. So I've heard people say Pet and Well, and I call it Pete and Well. But if you Google Pete and Well, we always call it Pete and Well Rock, but I think it's more commonly called Pete and Well Bluff. But go to YouTube, type in Pete and Well Bluff, and then you'll see videos of people kind of scrambling up the side, but not to the peak. You'll see a place where people, hiking around. They'll see videos of people climbing with ropes and gear. And then you'll see a couple of videos of people on the summit kind of doing that 360 panorama with their cell phone. And so I know it's possible to get up there. I hadn't been able to figure it out how to do it myself. And that was the plan this weekend. And we didn't make it up and I was a little bit bummed that we didn't. And then today when we came back last night and today I'm like, yeah, I'm bummed. I didn't get, so if anybody's listening to the show and you know someone from that part of the state who knows how to get up there, I'd totally love to talk to them. And again, I think I figured it out today. So what I did today is I looked at the video that some guy posted. It's like a 60-second video of them on the summit. There's him, a kid of about 12 or 13, and then another guy. And they're all up on the summit of Pete and Well Rock. And in the comments, you can comment on the videos. I said, hey, did you need climbing gear to get up there? He said, no, it's fairly easy to get up. A couple spots that were a little bit dangerous. And by dangerous, I mean, yeah, like some of the things I scrambled over today were a little bit dangerous in that yesterday, in that they were covered with pine needles. And so, yeah, I mean, it's so here Eben says, is Pete and Well Bluff and Rock beginner hiker friendly? Honestly, Eben, no. Yes and no. See, if you just want to go hike, you can do it. There was people there with, dogs and foo-foo dogs and people that were just kind of hiking around the bottom. And like getting up to some of these vertical cliffs, you can get right to there. It's not a large area, so it's like you're not going to like hike 3, 4, 5 miles there because it's just not that big of an area. But if you want to try to scramble up to like the peaks and stuff, I wouldn't say it's beginner hiker friendly. From the Fox Valley, see, even what I would do, if you want to, you should Google the Ice Age Trail, because there's nothing on the Ice Age Trail that's difficult. There's a couple of sections. I mean, there's, elevation changes and things like that, but there's nothing like we've never been on the Ice Age Trail and felt unsafe in terms of like, hey, one false step and you're tumbling down the side of a bluff. And there's also, and again, I'm banned from fascist book, but I used to be a member of it. There's a Facebook group, Ice Age Trail. There's an Ice Age Trail Facebook group. And that's another great place to, there's people on there who are like, hey, I remember this is just, now this couple years old from, I was, cause I've now been banned from Facebook for almost 2 years. But there's like a get off the couch group who they're like, hey, we're going out to hike the Ice Age this Saturday and such a place. And if you want to meet us, so there's just kind of open invitation type things for that. But yeah, for Pete and Well, it's a little bit more technical. You gotta be watching your footing and picking your steps. And yeah, it's a little more technical. If you just want to go and walk around the base, you'll have fun. And it's very scenic. It's kind of like if you've ever been to Devil's Lake. You want to go to a place with some great cliffs and rocks, but it's easy, hiker-friendly, go to Devil's Lake. Devil's Lake is a fantastic place to hike. It's one of my favorite places in the state. Pete and Well Bluff, first off, there's nothing around it. It's kind of just out in the middle of nowhere. But if you want to really do some, if you want to do some, just some good hiking, the Ice Age Trail, which, from the Fox Valley is less than an hour drive. If you want to do some really cool hiking, go to Devil's Lake, which ironically the Ice Age Trail runs through Devil's Lake. But the Ice Age Trail runs through the whole state, like from the western by St. Croix all the way down, loops down through the Dells, down to Albany, Janesville. Devil's Lake is kind of by Baraboo. Devil's Lake is by Baraboo. A little south of Baraboo. Devil's Lake is very close to Merrimack. So that's probably from the Fox Valley, maybe an hour and a half drive, I'm thinking. So yeah, if you want to, the Ice Age Trail would be great for a little bit of a closer hike. And then if you want a really cool hike, Devil's Lake is a place to go. Especially this time of year, it'd be just beautiful. You don't want to go in Devil's Lake, probably not the best place in the winter, because Devil's Lake would be dangerous in the winter because there's like stairs going up the bluffs. But in the winter, the stairs are stone, so they get a little bit of ice on them, a little bit of water. During the day, sun melts some snow, then it freezes. You'd have slick spots. So I've never been there, but people do hike it in the winter, but then they put like the if you're 90 minutes from Baraboo, then yeah, Devil's Lake is super cool. Just go there when there's no snow. And again, you can do it when there's snow, but then you would need to put like the ice cleats on your shoes, which you can buy them on, go to, Amazon and you can Google ice cleats for hiking and you'll see them. And once with those on, then it's pretty safe. Otherwise you might have some slick spots, but yeah. That's what I would say if you're looking for some really cool scenic hikes. The Ice Age Trail, a lot of forested areas, Devil's Lake, which the Ice Age Trail runs through as well. Super, super scenic. But, so back to Pete and Well Bluff. I'll wrap this one up here. Super cool. I didn't get to the top. I know you can because I've seen people on YouTube videos that are up there. I've seen people describing it, this guy who's old and retired and said he got up there. No, it was easy. And then if you go to Google Maps, you can also click on user added photos on Google Maps from Pete and Well Bluff. And you can see pictures of people that are standing up on the summit of Pete and Well Bluff. And there's just, I'm looking at one right now. There's some dude with a white polo shirt and tennis shoes and glasses, looks a little bit nerdy. They're just standing up there. They're not in climbing gear or anything like that. They're just standing up there looking. They're on the tip top of Pete and Well Bluff, and they're on a different section. Like there's different sections that you can scramble up to, And these guys are on like probably at midpoint, I'd say. They're probably kind of like midpoint of the rock outcropping. But there's other sections you can scramble up to the top too that are a little bit further north on the ridge there. It's probably not, hearing me describe it isn't very entertaining. So, it's a super cool, if you go to this picture I'm looking at was from Alexandra Silva from 2014. And he just took a picture, a street view picture. So if you go Google Peatonwell Bluff and then you zoom in and then you'll see these little, you hit the street view to browse street view images. And then you'll see these little blue dots pop up in various places. If you've ever used Street View for Google, that's how you can see, again, the Street View. You've got the overhead view from Google, but then the Street View is where you can look. So go to Google Maps, put in Peatonwell Bluff, and then hit the Street View, little stick figure guy, and then it'll show you the Street View images where they are, and then click on one of those little blue dots, and you'll see what the view is like from the summit. Anyway, so I got to make it back up there because I think I figured it out. So watching between looking at those videos that people have posted from the summit, and then some other guy posted some drone video of Peatonwell Bluff. He wasn't a hiker. He just was flying the drone over. I can kind of compare and see, and now I think I can see where you could scramble up to the top and get to one of those peaks. So I think next time I go, I'll be able to figure out how to get up there. And I'm looking forward to that. All right, enough of that. Next thing I was going to talk about real quick here, because it's not, it's more personal interest stuff for me, but some of my listeners, bourbon. So yeah, but I haven't talked about bourbon for a while. So last spring, if you haven't heard me say this, I have a heart arrhythmia. And I figured out about 5 years ago I had it. And the time I had it, I was out on my boat. I was drinking. It was super, super hot, got dehydrated. And then I woke up at go home, go to bed. I'm like, oh, I knew I was dehydrated because it's really hot in you. And all of a sudden, later in the day, you're not sweating. And I'm like, oh, man. So then I go home and then wake up at 3-4 in the morning or something. Something felt funny in my chest. And so I said to my fiance, I said, hey, she takes my pulse, and she's an ER nurse. She was in the ER for 20 years. Now she's moved to a surgery center. But I think you're an AFib. So I went to an urgent care. Yeah, you're an AFib. The guy said, what'd you do? I said, oh, I was out on my boat drinking. He's like, there's something called, so you can Google holiday heart, and you'll see that's the arrhythmia that I have. If it happens to people, if you end up drinking too much, which again, alcohol is a diuretic. So you get too much, you get dehydrated, you get a little bit of, you get that atrial fibrillation. So this was 5 years ago. So I cut back on how much I drank. Not a lot. I still drank a lot, but I made a cup. All I ever did is I drank some on Friday, and I drank a lot on Saturday afternoon. So that was only 2 days a week I would drink. And then so I drank pretty minimal amount. I cut it back to drinking about 4 drinks on a Friday, the equivalent of 4 drinks. And then on Saturday, I kind of figured it out. And I was for a while there, I would drink about 12 drinks on Saturday. But Saturday, my 12 drinks is from 2 in the afternoon until 10 p.m. So that's spread over quite a bit of time. Well, then went 2 years. By cutting it back a little bit, I went 2 years and I didn't have my heart arrhythmia pop up at all. In fact, I started thinking, maybe it'll never happen again. And then it happened again. And then I was like, okay, well, if it happens once every 2 years, no big deal. Then 2 months later, I got it again. I'm like, okay, it's clearly starting to happen more frequently. So I cut back a little bit more on what I drank. And then I went to a cardiologist. He said, hey, Nick, you got to hydrate. He goes, make sure when you're drinking that you're not just water, because water can actually lower your electrolyte levels. Drink Gatorade or something. Electrolytes. So I started doing that. And then I would probably get maybe once or twice a year, I'd end up, I would go 6 months fine, drink my 4 drinks on Friday, and then cut it about to about 10 drinks on Saturday. Because in a bottle of bourbon, there's 16 technical drinks, because an ounce and a half is a drink. So that's why when I say four drinks on Friday night, that's by, you know, an ounce and a half per drink. And then Saturdays, that would leave 12 drinks in the bottle. So if you start a bottle on Friday, finish it on Saturday, that would be 4 and 12. So that would leave a couple drinks in the bottom of the bottle. So that's what I'm saying. I'm probably about 10 drinks on Saturday that I would drink. And then that, again, served me pretty well. I just, every once in a while, I would get but it was once every 6 months. And so, okay. Then this past spring in like late March, early April, it started happening every weekend. Boom, boom, boom. And somebody didn't even drink that much. Now, there's other things that can cause AFib, like stress, that kind of stuff. So, and I was, once I started getting my atrial fibrillation, then I start stressing. And so then it's just these things come out. So anyway, all kinds of tests, this, that, and the other thing. Nothing's wrong with me. It's just basically this stress test for my heart, all stuff. It's essentially just this, what they call lone AFib. It's just, you know, a heart arrhythmia. And I think JJ Watt, a professional football player, he just had it. He was, you know, I don't know what he was doing, but he all of a sudden said, he made an announcement that he had gotten AFib and had to get shocked. For him, they shocked his heart back into rhythm. For me, they never did that. It would just go back within like 6 to 12 hours, my heart would go back into its normal rhythm anyway on its own. But anyway, so in June, I was talking to my regular doctor, and they're like, you know what, Nick, why don't you just, your AFib, just take like 2 months and don't drink. Go 8 weeks without drinking anything. And then when you start to, then you start drinking again, but just, you know, moderate. So that's what I did. I went 2 months, basically like I think it was all of May, all of June. I didn't drink anything, like not a drop. And then started on my Saturday afternoons and have a beer. And then got my blood work done again. And I did have some elevated liver enzymes, and then no liver damage, but just elevated. So anyway, got blood work done. The blood work looked great. Liver enzymes look great. Everything's great. So now, essentially now I don't drink at all on Fridays, and I have I have the technical equivalent of 4 drinks on a Saturday. And I still drink bourbon. But during this time, it's like, you know, as you guys know, I have this had this massive bourbon collection that I've been collecting for almost 20 years. Started in 2003 when I bought my first house and put a little bar in there collecting bourbons. And so I've collected this massive collection of bourbon with like 170 bottles of bourbon. And some of it I bought for $20, bottles I bought for $20 that were worth $1,000, bottles I bought for like $280 that were worth $3,000. So I don't know how much I'd invested in the thing, maybe $5,000 over the years and all those bottles. And so I'd like, you know, Jay Leno once said that the great thing about collecting cars is that when they go down in value, you can just drive them. Well, I always said the great thing about collecting bourbon is that if it goes down in value, I'll just drink it. The psychological value of having a bourbon collection that was, and it was a great talking piece, you know, friends came over and like, oh, wow. And people talk about, oh, you know, a friend of mine had a bottle of Pappy. I was like, yeah, I got a bottle of Pappy. I got the 23 year, the 20 year, the 15 year, there was a lot of psychological value in having this awesome bourbon collection. People loved to look at it when they came over, all that stuff. But then now that I couldn't, like, so since I've cut back to just essentially like 4 drinks on a Saturday, that's it. You know, I just can't indulge like I used to. So my collection then kind of like lost its psychological value. And the prices were still relatively high for bourbon. I think it's down from the peak of what bourbon's worth. But I started thinking, you know, if a recession hits, the value of you know, things like this might go down for a while. So I contacted a couple brokers online that buy rare alcohol collections. And long story short, I sold my bourbon collection to a broker for $35,000. So Tom had asked about how come I don't talk bourbon. I can't indulge on Saturdays like I used to. I can still have, you know, my few drinks, but it lost its psychological value, and I've just, so, you know, don't think about it as much and don't not as infatuated isn't the right word, but not as amused with the bourbon culture as I once was. And I hate to say that's what happens when you get old, but I mean, it's funny because I started talking to friends, and my friends like, oh yeah, I have to stop. You know, my fiance and my mutual French girl, she's probably 5-6 years younger than I am. And she's like, yeah, she goes, I really, if I have more than two drinks, I just get terrible migraines. And she goes, I don't know what it is, but like, I just can't, she goes, I don't really drink that much anymore. And she was really a nice party and kind of going to clubs kind of chick. So I'm like, yeah, I guess you just can't, you know, drink hard and party forever. And again, when I say drink hard, I figured, well, if I'm only drinking like light one night a week and hard one day per week, like that should be 5.5 days of recovery and only a day and a half of drinking. But yeah, as you get older, I guess the body just can't handle it. So that's why I don't talk about bourbon as much. I still drink every Saturday, have my four drinks. This weekend I had it was a special occasion because we were on our little trip. I had some Rock Hill Farms. Oh, that's fantastic bourbon. But otherwise, you know, I drink my Russell's Reserve 10-year or my Eagle Rare 10-year. And the good thing is it's a lot cheaper. Not that money doesn't matter to me, but I mean, Eagle Rare is so hard to find. I used to go do a bottle a week or almost a bottle a week. And now, I mean, I think a bottle lasted me like a month when I'm only having four drinks. Yeah, because four drinks every Saturday, there's 16 drinks in a bottle. So yeah, that's 4 weeks. So a bottle lasts me a month. Which when I used to have like 72 bottles of bourbon, 72 bottles of Eagle Rare stocked up, shit, that would have lasted me. Well, what's 72 months? That's 6 years. Yeah. 6 years. That was 6 years worth of bourbon instead of, you know, what I ended up drinking it in is in a year, just over a year's worth of bourbon. I would have had bourbon for a long, long time, but anyway, so yeah, that's bourbon. I sold my collection. And I figured that I should, the money that I made, I was just going to plow into more guns because what could be a better investment? Well, the bourbon was the best investment I'd ever made in my life. I mean, if I spent $5,000 and then turned a $30,000 product because I sold it for $35,000, plus the psychological value of having owned it the whole time and showing it off to friends and people and talking and yeah, it was zero regrets at all about the whole thing. And I don't miss it. I mean, I don't walk through my kitchen dining room area and say, oh, I wish my bird collection was still here. I did. You know, I enjoyed it while I had it. It was super cool, super fun. I was glad when I had it, but yeah, I timed it just right. I for personal reasons, and I couldn't just enjoy. And that was the thing, because now I can't drink like I used to and really indulge. Jay Leno used to say, if the great thing about collecting cars is if they go down in value, you can just sell them. Well, the great thing about collecting bourbon, if I went down to Valley, I could just drink it. Well, I had so much bourbon that there's no way I was ever going to drink all that. And if I could, I couldn't really like tear into it. And just, I mean, and I could have just sipped it and like enjoyed it like for the taste. But see, for me, even like with food, like I don't eat food for like satisfaction for me from food doesn't come if it tastes good. It comes from like the fullness. Like when I eat, like I eat fast. I like to just wolf that shit down because that's what satisfies me. Not like the taste, not even eating a lot, but I like to eat quickly because that's just, okay, when I eat a protein bar, I like to stick like half the protein bar in my mouth. So like my mouth is like full of this gooey protein bar when I chew it because that feels like satiation to me. That satisfies me like that, you know, versus like, okay, my daughters, they'll sit there and they'll eat like a tortilla chip and they'll bite it in like three pieces. They bite one part and then they chew that and then they bite another. And they, like me, one tortilla chip, boom, in my mouth, eat the whole thing at once. Or probably two. When we have taco dip, I like take the Tostitos scoops and I put one on one side, one on the other. So I call it like I forget what I call it, but I am essentially making like a taco dip sandwich with a tortilla scoop on top and bottom, and then boom, the whole thing in my mouth. I like that full feeling of having my mouth full of food. And same thing with bourbon. Like for me to enjoy it, it's not like just sip it. And it's like, now I'll get a nice little buzz off it. Like that was more enjoyment for me. So anyway, bourbon collection's gone. And now the money I'm just going to plow into buying more guns. And that's, and I think I'm going to do that, like the space that the bourbon, the shelves at the bourbon sat on my wall. I think I'm going to stick, buy more guns and all kinds of different guns and put a nice gun collection in that spot. So I think that was a good, good trade-off. So next thing I was going to talk about tonight was polling places. Because this was another question that our friend Tom from Madison or Madison area had asked. And he had asked, like, some of the places that he – or the places that he votes, it's not, to my understanding, a government building. I think it's one of the places might be a church. But that they're posted and posted only just for the election day. And so he had asked, you know, is this something that Wisconsin Carry has looked at? Is there preemption? Is there so? And so it's a great question, and especially apropos right now because we're coming up on the midterm elections and a lot of people are going to be voting. So here's a scoop on this, posted polling places. So, again, this came up a few years ago. So government buildings, they can choose to post or not post. So if it's a government building, state, county, local, unfortunately, you know, Scott Walker wrote that into the state law. I mean, and how fucked up is that? The Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights, but specifically applies to government and limits government's authority. As an example, a private business can infringe on free speech. I mean, look at fascist book all they want. But like, okay, if you're a cashier at McDonald's, you don't have the right to tell every customer that comes in, hey, make America great again while you wait on them. So free speech is, and the Bill of Rights applies to the government. Sorry for the water break there. So that's, but you know, nonetheless, Walker and the Republicans gave municipalities the option of posting or not posting. So a local commie mayor, city council, they still get to violate your Second Amendment rights, which again is so jacked up. I mean, if there's anyone who should not be able to prohibit carry, it's government. Government buildings, because the Second Amendment applies to government, government buildings, the Second Amendment should prevent them from prohibiting carry. Libraries, city hall, city council meetings, all those places, public works facilities. But here you go. And this is something that I've learned, and you probably have too, but over the past decade, even Republicans, it's the number one goal always seems to be to act in the best interest of government and in the best interest of preserving government power. You know, Representative Knodel had a gun bill that Sheriff Clark had asked him to author. This is several years ago, to do with getting firearms that were used in self-defense, getting those returned to the person who was deemed justified in using a firearm for self-defense. This was after the Kahansky's concertina beer hall, where he shot a robber, shot and killed a robber that came in to rob his place. He was deemed there was going to be no charges, but they wouldn't give him his gun back. And so this Sheriff Clark reaches out to Representative Knodel, says, hey, can you come up with a bill? To represent, he said, talk to Nick over at Wisconsin Carry. So Representative Knodel gets his bill authored, brings me in late in the process and says, hey, here's this bill. What do you think? And I'm like, I ran it by our attorneys. I said, well, our attorneys say it's going to make it worse. And what they did is he went around to all the DAs and asked their opinion, asked a bunch of DAs, how long do you think before we should give people back their gun? Well, you're asking here's a Republican, and he's going and asking DAs. The DAs are the ones in Milwaukee County who were refusing to give back the guns. So, but that's just so typical of how politicians, the first thing that they go to do is not ask citizens, is not think about what's best for the citizens. They go to ask their own constituency, government, fellow government people. So that's one of the frustrating things, is you realize that even Republicans, a lot of them are looking out for government first. You know, here we want a bill to prevent DAs from refusing to give back guns. And what do? They go ask the DAs, what are you okay with? Why don't you go ask the citizens, hey, what are you guys okay with? And start from there. Why don't you go ask citizens, hey, citizen, after you know, what do you think is a reasonable amount of time after you, and you don't even need to ask because the answer is going to be right away. I mean, when they say no charges, boom, your gun should be back to you within 24 hours. I mean, fine, give them a little bit of time to do the paperwork. But nope, always acting in the best interest of the government. So that's the same thing with when they pass concealed carry. Right into the original law, municipalities can choose. So that way your commie little Milwaukees and your commie Madisons and your commie, or some other commie places, Shorewood, they can all choose to post. That's the first part of this is if it's a government building, they can choose to post and even choose to selectively post just on election days. So that's part one. If it's not a government building, the municipality, I don't think that they can mandate a private entity post in normal circumstances. In fact, I'm almost sure they can't. But they could certainly require it as a condition of the agreement to hold elections there. Now, I don't know the details of these agreements. I don't know if these entities that host elections get paid by the municipalities. I don't know how the agreements get made. I mean, I vote in a church in New Berlin, I want to say St. Mary, but that's not sounding right. Anyway, I vote in a church in New Berlin. And they're not posted, and I carry when I vote. But I don't know whether they get paid by the city of New Berlin to allow them, I would assume maybe they do, to allow them to use their church as a polling place. And somewhere in that agreement, now New Berlin doesn't, because New Berlin allows you to carry in City Hall. New Berlin allows you to carry in the, I'm pretty sure, the library too, but New Berlin does not prohibit carrying government-owned buildings. But they could certainly and probably do, like, for example, Madison, write into their agreements with their having a polling place at a, okay, we'll just say a private church. Holy Apostles in Middleton, Wisconsin is going to host an election, a polling place. And the agreement between the city clerk and the Holy Apostles congregation is that you have to restrict carry on election day. Well, certainly the church could say, hey, pound sand. And then the government entity is just going to say, okay, well, then we're not going to host, you can't be a polling place. Again, I don't know if these entities get paid. I don't know if there's a benefit to these entities. But when this has come up in the past, the issue has always been that we need a complainant. We need an entity who hosts an election, for example, a polling place, that agreed to be a polling place but objects to having to post. So if one of these entities, like in where I vote in New Berlin, which is really going to bug me, it's not St. Mary's. What's just the name of it? I can't believe I can't think of the name of this church. Now St. Mary's is stuck in my head, and I can't. Now I gotta look at. Okay, oh there it is, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. So my polling place is St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in New Berlin. So the city of New Berlin, I'm guessing, contracts with St. Elizabeth Ann Seton to say, hey, I don't think these entities volunteer their space for free. Maybe they do. But St. Elizabeth Ann Seton has agreement with New Berlin. Hey, we're going to allow you to use our place as a polling place. You're going to pay us $500 for rent for the day. And then New Berlin doesn't, but if New Berlin wanted to and they said, hey, you're going to, the conditions are you have to post your building on election day, St. Elizabeth and Seton could say, no, we don't want to do that. And New Berlin could say, okay, well, then we're going to go host the election at Woodbridge Community Church, which is just down the road from St. Elizabeth and Seton. Because New Berlin could certainly choose to do a polling place. Nobody's entitled to be a polling place. That's some kind of agreement that comes up between the city and the polling place. But perhaps there's a polling place, like Elizabeth Ann Seton, let's say that they, let's say a new mayor of New Berlin came in. He said, oh, a new council, we want you to post. And they never did before. And they say, hey, we don't mind being a polling place, but we're not going to post. Well, if New Berlin said, fine, we're going to pull and we're going to take the election somewhere else, perhaps there is a case that could be made there. But it would have to be Elizabeth Ann Seton to be the plaintiff, to be the one to say, hey, we don't want to post, but the city of New Berlin is making us post. We don't think that they can do that. Because I can't, Wisconsin Carry can't just go sue. Even if someone who says, oh, I want to vote and I want to carry when I vote and I can't because they're posted. Well, a private entity can choose to post and a government entity can choose to post. So you as an individual likely don't have any standing under the law. Maybe there's some kind of Second Amendment claim to be made there, but I don't think you'd have much luck with it because, you know, they always carve out these sensitive places. But they're going to say, oh, what if someone comes in open carrying a rifle into, that's going to suppress, mitigate, it's going to chill people. People aren't going to want to go vote. They're going to be intimidated out of voting if someone is in there open carrying while they're voting with an AR over their back. So I don't have faith that the court system would find that your Second Amendment rights were violated because you couldn't carry when you went to vote. But nonetheless, here in Wisconsin, the law is they can choose to post government buildings and a private entity can choose to post as they wish, even if it's just for a short period of time. And so it doesn't fall under that special event exemption either, because it's just a private entity choosing to post. But if you find if you go talk to your the pastor of your church and your church is a polling place, you say to the pastor, hey, you guys let me carry in here every Sunday, but yet I want to come in and vote and I can't carry when I vote. And the pastor says, well, you know, that the city of New Berlin required us to post if we were going to be a polling place. We didn't want to, but we had no other choice other than to say, fine, we're not going to host elections anymore, and then we'd lose the rent payment, or then we'd lose the lease payment, or then we'd lose. And honestly, do you really see, I mean, look at these, do you see a church wanting to play hardball with local government? I mean, these people in local politics, they all scratch each other's backs. I mean, the ruling class doesn't push back on the ruling class. And so that's the problem here is I don't foresee the pastor or the administrator of a church wanting to go toe-to-toe with the mayor and the city council of the city that they're in, knowing that the old cliche, you can't fight City Hall. I mean, they're just worried about City Hall. It's the same thing with parents that don't want to push back against their kid's school. They're worried about little Johnny or little Susie getting treated unfairly because and getting targeted because, oh, their parents are troublemakers. And so the repercussions getting taken out on their kids. There's to some extent, some of that as well with businesses in a community. They don't want to, this was what happened, I think, up in like the Baraboo area where the city was going to require as part of city ordinances, require that any gun stores had to have 24-hour monitored surveillance, video surveillance. And we're like, hey, the city can't require that. State law doesn't have any provision that allows cities to require gun stores to have surveillance cameras. But we needed a plaintiff. I want to be a gun store in Baraboo, but I don't want to have to put in video cameras. I can't afford it. I reached out to all the gun stores in Baraboo and said, hey, this is Nick with Wisconsin Carry. We think this ordinance they're going to pass. But all these local business owners, retail business owners, they didn't want to make waves with the city. So we couldn't find a plaintiff. And Wisconsin Carry can't go sue because we're not affected. Wisconsin Carry can't say, hey, I'm going to sue Baraboo because they're requiring, I think it was Baraboo, I'm going to sue Baraboo because they're requiring all gun stores to have surveillance cameras. And they're like, well, do you have a gun store? No. well, then you're not affected by it. You can't just go, that's called standing. You can't just go sue because you want to sue. You have to have standing. You have to be affected. Otherwise, I could sue New Berlin because they violated the rights of some dude across town. I can't sue on someone else's behalf. I have to you have to personally be affected or be a party to the instance that is occurring. Oh, so yeah, so that's why that's the story there is, hey, if you find one, if you find a church that says, hey, we didn't want to post, but we didn't have a choice. City of New Berlin came and said, hey, if you still want to be a polling place, you're going to have to post. Well, if they want to reach out to me and they want to go toe-to-toe with the New Berlin and Wisconsin Kerry, our attorneys are acting great. I mean, we'll take up, likely take up, I can't promise, likely take up the case. But if you, as a voter, there's no, we wouldn't have standing just as a voter to go and sue because the private entity agreed to post. And so that's what the situation is with that. So this is like this part of the show, like I swear I can't do more than a 90-minute show because if I talk for too long, I just get congested. Like as soon as I'm done talking, as soon as the show is over, I'll be fine. But like right now, like my nose is super congested. So I apologize for sniffing into the radio here, but that's just what happens when I talk for too long. I don't know if I must be just mouth breathing for too long. And then my nose gets all something. Anyway. So now I'm going to sneeze because I was trying to breathe through my nose. All right, there we go. So Florida, death penalty. I don't know if any of you guys were paying attention to this. Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland school shooter massacre dude, punk, lunatic. He was... I believe he pled guilty and so, of course, was convicted of the mass shooting at Parkland, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School down in Parkland, Florida. But now the next phase was the death penalty phase where a jury in Florida decides, hey, because I don't know if it used to be a judge, but now a jury decides whether you get the death penalty or not. It's not you're convicted of a crime that's worthy of the death penalty. But then a jury is the one that decides if you're actually going to get the death penalty or get life in jail. So that's the law in Florida. So they've got to present the case again to this jury. Now, when we had the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and another instance of cops, you had the Broward coward in Parkland, Florida, who refused to go in and, take down that shooter. Then you had Uvalde, Texas, where the cops set up a perimeter while kids were bleeding to death and still getting shot in the classrooms. But I was interviewed by a couple news outlets. And I said, hey, if you want to deter mass shootings, and I put this out on social media too, first off, sentence Nicholas Cruz to death, because in the past, a lot of these mass shooters were suicidal, kill a bunch of people, then kill themselves. But more recently, I've seen a lot of these school shooters that don't kill themselves. There was the guy in the theater in, was it Aurora, Colorado, Denver, somewhere? This is the Batman premiere movie. He didn't kill himself. He even had body armor on to make sure that he didn't get killed. So a lot of these, it seems like there's a shift where people who used to be suicidal and they go take out a bunch of people and then kill themselves. Now it seems like a lot of these mass shooters, their mental process, their mental motivations are different. And some of them just want that notoriety and they're going to go to jail and still be a notorious forever. And so the fact that some of them don't want to die is actually a good thing because then fear of dying would be a deterrent. So we got this case down in Florida, and I don't know if you guys are watching the news this past week, but apparently jury of 12 and one of the jurors wouldn't vote in favor of the death penalty. said they were a hard no. And 11 of the jurors, I guess, were, well, I guess they said that there was one juror who was a hard no. And then when that person refused, then a couple others went along with them. But those other two jurors they thought could have been persuaded. But it was either 11 to 1 or 11 to 3. Not 11, excuse me, 11 to 1 or 9 to 3. But just a perfect case in American liberalism, because one bleeding heart out of 12 prevents something that would actually, I believe, solve a problem, not solve a problem, but address a problem in favor of this person's feelings and some phony notion of compassion. And you can say what you want about the death penalty, because in general, I'm not really a supporter of the death penalty anymore. I've just seen too many instances where innocent people were put to death, seen too many instances where people on death row were found later, you know, especially with the advent of DNA, found to be innocent. So like, I'm not a big supporter of the death penalty anymore. I could envision a situation where I'm a supporter of the death penalty. I'm a supporter of the death penalty in principle, but not in practice, because it just hasn't been very well. Nicholas Cruz is a perfect example of where I'd support the death penalty, because that guy, kid, lunatic, he deserves that kind of punishment. And I also think that putting him to death would send a chilling effect to other potential mass shooters. This is what happens when you commit mass murder. But instead, one bleeding heart out of 12 jurors prevents something that I think would have solved a problem or addressed a problem in favor of the, so one bleeding heart, their feelings and their phony compassion for Nicholas Cruz and not wanting to put him to death, I don't think that is compassionate, because I think that very likely, had he been sentenced to death, other mass shooters might have been deterred. Not all, but some mass shooters might have been deterred from doing, hey, if I don't do that and don't do a mass shooting in Florida, they'll put your ass to death. Now, some of these mass shooters that are already suicidal, they're not going to care, of course. But we've got a call coming in here. I'll get you in just a second here. But yeah, I think what a huge missed opportunity, and a perfect case, again, in American liberalism, because we could solve problems. We could deter some mass shootings potentially. But one little bleeding heart stands in the way of that getting done. And as a result, it's honestly, I believe, more likely that more people will, that people will die in a mass shooting that wouldn't have. If Nicholas Cruz would have been sentenced to death, I think it's likely that some mass shootings might have been deterred and now won't. So this person who thought they were being compassionate and not wanting to vote Nicholas or sentence Nicholas Cruz to death will end up probably costing some lives in the future. All right. So this is always a crapshoot when I pick up whenever I see 111, it's usually someone Skyping in, but welcome to Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Michael. How about you?
Michael, good. How are you? Where are you calling from tonight?
Yeah, calling from New York.
From New York, got it. Did you have a particular comment on the Nicholas Cruz situation or something else that we talked about tonight? Or?
Right, I want to talk about the Iranian Revolution to you guys, because it should be learned.
See, it's just such a crapshoot when you take a... So some guy browsing Blog Talk Radio, and he wants to talk about the Iranian Revolution with us. Maybe I should have let him go on for a little bit longer, but the Iranian Revolution just isn't part of the subject matter here on Well Armed Radio tonight. So too bad. Thought maybe we had we've got a couple of interesting calls with recently. We had one guy from California who calls in and a few others, but not tonight. So last thing I was going to talk about tonight, and another example of bleeding heart liberalism in America. There was a story today on Channel 12 that there's a kid who I call him a kid. I think it's a fair assessment. He's a kid. I think he was under 18, but he steals a bike out of a front yard in Milwaukee over the weekend, this past weekend. one of the neighbors that sees him stealing the bike, I don't know if it was his bike or his neighbor's bike, but he knew this kid was stealing the bike, grabs the kid to prevent him from leaving and gets on the phone and calls the police. So he's holding the kid by like the shirt, stand there. And of course, yeah, the kid's scared because he got caught. And then at one point he kind of puts his hand around the kid's neck, not to squeeze him, not to choke him, but just like as like a holding him by the neck so he can't run away. Like, don't even think of running away. And then some other guy comes up who's running his cell phone and says, oh man, you know, you can't, don't be grabbing him around the neck. So this video, supposedly the news says it goes viral. I don't know if it really went viral, but the news wants to tell you it went viral because they want to. So here's a kid, young punk steals a bike. When a citizen tries to detain the kid, the punk, and call the police, the citizen becomes the pariah. And if you heard this, it's on Channel 12 on their website. The criminal is portrayed as the victim. They talk to some community activists who's now protesting outside of the home of the person who caught the kid stealing the bike and talking about how terrible this guy who was trying to stop the kid from getting away is. And then this Vaughn Mays refers to the guy who tried to stop the kid from getting away as vigilantes. And it's just a very favorable reception from the news to the protesters who were protesting the guy. Here's a citizen who stopped someone from stealing a bike. We should be applauding that citizen. We should be applauding the citizen who stepped in to stop a kid from stealing a bike. And hey, hopefully that kid gets enough punishment to think to himself, you know what? I better straighten myself out because I tried to steal a bike and I got in big trouble. I'm not even going to think about trying to steal a car. But the news report, like clearly, like if you watch it, the news report portrays the criminal, the young punk, and he's just a kid, but they portray him as the victim who's getting treated unfairly. Those acting within the law stop someone from stop someone from property theft, not using deadly force, just using physical restraint. In fact, not even, because he didn't actually have to physically restrain him. He just at one point put his hand around the kid's neck to threaten to, you know. But those acting within the law are deemed vigilantes and referred to, like the guy in the news, this Vaughn Mays, referred to him as vigilante. Now they're protesting outside of his house. And everybody feels sorry for this punk kid who is stealing someone's bike. No one feels sorry for the kid whose bike was going to be stolen. No one feels sorry that, oh, this kid, you know, he's such a nice kid. And then he comes out and his bike is gone. And no one feels sorry for the, no one wants to speak on behalf of this guy who is willing to stop someone's property from being stolen. But instead, it's just completely flipped on its end. The law-abiding deemed vigilantes frowned upon. The criminals portrayed as victims. And it's just empowering criminals and kicking the law-abiding in the shin. And when you do that, is there any surprise why we now have such out-of-control crime? And it's just going to get worse. Because when all you do is feel sorry for criminals and you don't feel sorry for the victims, the true victims, because they just don't get the TV coverage or there's the news doesn't choose to take that angle. All you're going to get is more theft. All you're going to get is more. And look, and now here's a guy that tried to stop a kid from stealing a bike, and now they're protesting outside of his house. They should be throwing him a party. But that's going to deter other people from stopping crimes, other people who might have stepped up and said, hey, I'm going to act on behalf of my fellow citizen and stop this person from breaking into my neighbor's car. They're just going to say, hey, forget that. I don't want to be on the news as the bad guy. I mean, enough people already have that attitude, but now it's just even going to be worse. Your neighbor's got three kids and they come running home and they put the bike in the front yard, go run in the house, and you see someone else come to, that you know it's not their bike. They're going to come steal that bike and you stop them from doing it. No more. I don't want to be the one on TV. I don't want to be on TV. I don't want to have protesters outside my house. Because I now, and some people would say, oh, that was just because he put his neck around the hand around the neck of the kid. Again, I saw it. And he did. He put his hand like around the kid's neck. Didn't squeeze it. Didn't choke him. Didn't whatever. But I mean, he did. But so what? I mean, had he been sitting there choking the kid out, yeah, okay. I mean, that's a bit extreme if you're going to sit here. And the kid's, he's holding the kid up in a elbow lock around his chin, and the kid's feet are off the ground. He's kicking his feet, and he's, like, pulling the guy's arms, like, trying to breathe. And, you know, okay, that's different. That'd be worth getting up in arms. But, I mean, if you saw the video, like, it's he never squeezes the kid's neck. He just kind of, like, puts his hand around the kid's neck to, like, keep him from running away. As in, like, hey, if the kid starts to run, he's going to grab him by the neck and, you know. Anyway, I saw it today and I thought, man, we are just so screwed as a country. Oh, and of course, the kid's black, the guy's white. I forgot to add that into the story. The kid's black, the guy's white. Had the guy been black and the kid been black, this wouldn't have probably made the news either. But, you know, the news media. What is Clay Travis or Buck Sexton? I forget which one it is, but they always say that the demand for racism in this country far exceeds the supply of racism in this country. But anyway, so that's the show. Thank you guys for popping in here live. It's great to see, hear from you again, and get back on the radio waves. I'll be more regular now. Now that it gets dark at 6 o'clock at night. It's funny because, okay, it's 9:30 in the summer. It's still slightly light out right now. It's sunset already, but in the summer, the sky would still be light right now, and it's 9:27. I'd probably have been just getting off the golf course about 20 minutes ago if it was summer. But anyway, you guys have a great week. Thanks for tuning in, and you guys carry on and be well armed.
Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.